Good morning. Thank you. My name is Scott McNeil. It is my privilege to serve as the minister here. I just realized I'm not wearing this thing. That's what's going on. I'm going to project until we sing. How about that? So, my name is Scott McNeil. It's my privilege to serve here as the settled minister at BRU. This morning's call to worship comes from Kenneth Patton. Thank you. He writes, "Let us worship with our eyes and ears and fingertips. Let us love the world through heart and mind and body. We feed our eyes upon the mystery and revelation in the faces of our siblings, our brothers, and our sisters. We seek to know the wistfulness of the very young and the wistfulness of the very old, the wistfulness of people in all times of life. All life flows into a great common life if we will only open our eyes to our companions. So let us worship, not in bowing down, not with closed eyes and stopped ears. Let us worship with the opening of all the windows of our beings, with the full outstretching of our spirits. Life comes with singing and laughter, with tears and confiding, with a rising wave too great to be held in the mind and heart and body to those who have fallen in love with life. So let us worship and let us learn to love." Join us in our worship this morning. Join us by starting with a couple of gathering hymns. This morning, for our chalice lighting, obviously we're lighting a fire, but our worship centers on the idea of water. Taking two of the natural elements that we so obviously pull together in worship didn't quite seem fair. So I found this reading that addresses all four elements, and I'll highlight water and fire. This is an adapted reading from Joanna Macy and John Seed. They write, "What are you? What am I? Intersecting cycles of water, earth, air, and fire, that's what I am, and that's what you are. Water, blood, mucus, sweat, tears, inner oceans togged by the moon, tides within and tides without, streaming fluids floating in our cells, washing and nourishing through endless riverways, moisture pouring in and through and out of you, of me, and the vast poem of all of life. You are that. I am that." They talk about earth. They talk about air. They end with fire. They say fire from our sun that fuels all life, drawing up plants and raising the waters to the sky to fall again, replenishing the earth. The inner furnace of our metabolism burns with the fire of the Big Bang that first sent matter, energy, spinning through space and time. And the same fire, the very same fire as the lightning that flashed into the primordial soup that birthed all of life, the fire that's right there. You were there. I was there, for each cell of our bodies is descended in an unbroken chain from that event. And so this morning, we light our chalice from a flame from the community, from the joys and sorrows we bring as individuals to the congregation. We light this chalice from a flame that has lived and will live throughout all of eternity. If there are other kids who decided to stick around and decide you either want to head back or stretch your legs, feel free to do so. If there are other adults who decide you want to do that, feel free to do so as well. That's not frowned upon. So I wanted to start this service with a reading, and to explain some about this that I'm wearing. This is called a stole. And yesterday was meeting with a family, and they saw that I had several of these. And this other minister, who I don't think is here, so I'm going to tell this story. So this other minister said, "Well, the plural of stole is stolen, and those all look very nice, and so they're hot. So it's like they're hot, they're stolen." And I was like, I didn't steal these, but
I appreciated that he thought they looked good. So this stole, it is meant to kind of evoke some images. And I, right after I left you all in June, I had to go get eyeglasses, which I'm not wearing today. I should be, shame on me. But so perhaps you can't see from where you are, but if you can, what images do you see on this stole, this thing around my neck? There's what at the bottoms? Blue and white duck at the bottom. Moon. Did I hear moon? Water. Leaves. Dove. Grass. Okay, I need... My partner also keeps telling me I need to get my hearing worked on as well. So... I heard some of what was said there. All right, so I heard water, which is very fitting for today, right? So water, dove. Let me tell you, this is what I mentioned to Jeanette. Where I went with this is that this is meant in some part to be the flood scene. How many of you know the story of the flood from the Hebrew Bible, at least? The flood that comes down on the earth, kind of ruins everything, and then, great. And then Noah sends out a dove, that's this thing over here, to see if it's safe for the people and the animals to come out. And when the dove brings back a plant, something that's growing, an olive branch, you're right, see, I don't remember the Bible that well, whoever said that. The olive branch, you're right. Then we know it's safe to come back. And that's what I've always thought of when I see this with the water and so on. And I think there are even images to me of the earth on here. And as I see this image of the earth beside me, and as I think about our water communion service today, I found this reading and I wanted to share it with you. So I invite you just to sit as still as you can. If you can't sit still physically, I can't either. So maybe just sit still mentally if you can. Whatever still means, and hear these words. It's a reading from Mark Bellatini, one of my colleagues. He writes, "The Earth, one planet, round, global, so that when you trace its shape with your finger, you end up where you started. It's one. It's whole. All the dotted lines we draw on our maps of the globe are just that, dotted lines. They smear easily. Oceans can be crossed, mountains can be crossed, even the desert can be crossed. The grain that grows on one side of the border tastes just as good as the grain on the other side. Moreover, bread made from rice is just as nourishing to our body and spirit as bread made from corn or spelt or taff or wheat or barley. There's no superior land, no chosen site, no divine destiny falling on any one nation, whoever draws the lines just so. There's only one earth we all share. We, the living, with all else that lives and does not live. Think about it. All of the earth, the air, the fire, the water, virus, granite, wave, city, corn, prophet, beggar, child, slum, tower, robin, eel, fish, grandfather, roses, thorns. Everything are within this circle, undivided by dotted lines or final certainties. Everything, everything for good or ill is part of the shared whole. Sky, earth, song, words, now, and even this, silence. It's this idea of everything being together that I wanted to use for water communion. I've wondered, with Water Communion Sunday, how do you talk about water when part of our country and part of our world struggles with drought? Who can tell me what a drought is? Earth scientist in the room, anybody? What's a drought? Better than I am. I'm a minister and a liberal arts guy. I don't know. Shout it out. No hands, just go. That's right, not a lot of water. Rainfall less than normal. Good. Okay, so that's good. That's good. What are some, are there other types of drought other than physical drought?
Soul drought.
You feeling me? Drought of love. So what does it look like when there's a soul drought? No love. I mean, it's a time of being lacking, where you want or need something. Water, love, connection, whatever it is, a time of lacking and needing. And so, yes, we often think about the soil, what feeds us and sustains us and nourishes us, but sometimes it's even our bodies or our souls that need this. What's difficult when it comes to physical droughts is that they often sneak up on us. We can't always predict with the same certainty of rainfalls or hurricanes, things like that, what a drought will be like. One scientist that I was reading talks about the fact that, you know, we can be outside enjoying really beautiful days, like this week. A little hot, but really nice to have some sun out. But over a few weeks and then a few months, we start to notice we haven't had a lot of rain. We've had to water our gardens a lot, our lawns, and then the lakes are reduced a little bit. The fish aren't growing as much. The animals aren't doing as well. And then one by one, there are different things starting to take effect around the country. It doesn't always take weeks or months to notice the effects of floods, for instance. But a drought often takes time. It doesn't happen just in one day. That's one of the things I want us to think about in this service, where we talk about both drought, balance, and flood. Drought takes a long time to recover from and a long time to notice. How many of you have ever seen or kind of noticed a drought before? Have you ever lived in the desert or been to the desert? Any of you? Taken a walk there? I told a really embarrassing story at the first service. Maybe you've had a similar experience. I went hiking in the desert once, and I thought I had enough water, but then I drank it all. And I thought, well, I can make it. The next stop has water. They all do. And of course, that stop, the water fountain was broke. It was a mile and a half trek, and there was no water. It was late June, and it was hot, and it was a desert. And I wondered, in this drought, in this place where I wondered, could I get out of there and how I would get nourished and have some replenishment, I wondered what I would do. So I started looking around. Have you ever really wanted something, so you started thinking how you might get it? Earlier I mentioned chocolate, but that's not a need as much as a desire. But you might start looking around. Sometimes as adults we have to do this, or even as countries. We start losing our resources, and we wonder how others have them, and we might gain them. So I was doing this, and I would ask people, do you have any extra water? Just a little bit you could pour in my bottle. And everyone else was in the desert with me, and it was 100 degrees, and no one had water to spare, even when they had two bottles. And I saw that they had two bottles. And I was not happy that they had two bottles, and I had no bottles. It was my fault. I should have planned a little bit better. It was hot and scary. This is kind of what happens when you get in a drought. Whether it's physical or emotional or spiritual, we become starved and scared, uncertain where our next thing will come from, whatever it is, water or love or comfort. The goal for us isn't that we'll be able to avoid droughts, because again, we can't always plan for them. Rather, it's in getting help when we're there. It's also in giving help when we're not. So here is a short story that I want to share with you. It's a Buddhist text called Sapira's Bowl. Okay? Now, I mentioned also at the first service that this story, you'd often use instruments to play along and have some fun. And this congregation is a very musically oriented congregation, but I wasn't on the bowl. So we don't have instruments this time, but we'll reprise. Anise is good, I think, at helping me with this. So we'll reprise the story sometime when you're not bored with it. And we'll get the instruments in and make it a little bit more entertaining. So just imagine it as you listen. So it starts off with this true and kind of wise line. Hard times starve people's spirits as well as their bodies. Hard times starve people's spirits as well as their bodies. So it was once, when the Buddha lived and the famine struck the land. The rains failed and the heat of the sun withered the harvest in the field. All around, people were hungry and they were in pain, and they were starting to feel sick. In the midst of this misery, some people kind of became greedy, and they started hoarding the food for themselves. The Buddha's followers came to the Buddha, bringing stories of being sad and also feeling a little shame for stealing and hoarding some of the food themselves. They didn't feel great about it, but they were scared too. Remember, hard times starve people's spirits. They mentioned that one merchant in town hurt another person, all for one bag of grain. They had heard of a woman who sold her last goat, her very last goat, to buy some flour, and on her way home, she was attacked by robbers, and the flour was stolen, so she had nothing. Saddest of all, Lord Buddha said a third, are the stories of children dying of hunger on the poor side of town, because there are those in our town who have all the grain and milk and sugar. And so the Buddha said, call everyone together, we'll see what we can do to help. They had a sort of town meeting. So the Buddha's followers called a big meeting, and everyone came. Hundreds of people came together, rich and poor, well-fed and starving. Out of respect for the Buddha, they all came to hear his words. The Buddha said, citizens of this fair land, surely there is enough food around here somewhere, even if it's not exactly what you would like. Even if it's not your favorite, there's enough food for everyone to be fed. If we all share what we have in the lean season, then we'll all survive to enjoy the benefits of the next good harvest. The poor and the hungry looked hopeful at the Buddha's words, but the rich people, the people with more at that time, grumbled. One lied and just said, my granary is empty. There is nothing in there. I'm kind of hungry myself. And he had hoped that his stomach might growl at that moment. Another person said, well, yeah, really, the people who don't have food seem kind of lazy. I'm working hard. Let them come work for me, and then they can use that to buy their food. Another said, I think we just have too many people. Let's let some of the poorer people go to another town. The Buddha sighed. He sighed when his eye fell upon the people with hearts of stone, and he wondered, is there no one here who will take on the job of helping to feed the poor and the homeless? And everyone was silent. Everyone kind of shifted in their seats and looked around, not knowing the answer. There was silence. In many ways, there was a drought of compassion in that room. But then a small voice piped up. Like a tiny raindrop, just a little drop, a small voice piped up, and a little girl said, I will, Lord Buddha. And out of the crowd stepped a little girl, no more than 6 or 7. She was a merchant's child, dressed in fine silk. There were flowers braided in her hair. She said, my name is Supriya, and said the child, and I have a bowl to fill with food for the hungry. When can I begin? The Buddha smiled. Small child, your heart is filled with love, but how will you do this alone? Supriya replied, not alone, Lord Buddha, but with your help. I'll take this from house to house, and I'll ask for food for the poor, and I won't be refused. I know it. Looking at the child with her earnest face and shining eyes, even the most selfish amongst them grew ashamed and thoughtful. Well, I do have a little grain somewhere back in the storehouse, mumbled one person. Another remembered that they had some pickled mango from a harvest of years past, and someone recalled that their family had been poor once, and it might be nice to help. And then she took her bowl, and every day she went from house to house in every part of town. Wherever she went, little by little, the bowl got filled. Sometimes an old grandmother would fill it with rice. Sometimes children would give up their sweets for the day. Often others would join her with their bowls and help to take the food to the people who needed it. And sometimes it's said that when she was tired of walking, she would rest in the shade of the banyan tree. When she awoke, she would find the bowl magically filled all by itself. Now, she said, Now the hungry will eat, and the people of this town will take care of each other. This is how it is. She could do nothing about the drought. What happened to the land around her happened to the land around her, but with her voice, she could help nourish the people around her. Over the week, Anissa helped me plan this worship, and I was very grateful being new to this. And so we're going to sing a couple of lines from a song to bridge us between this part and sharing our waters together. I mentioned that today, our water communion service, we are doing two parts of a ritual. The first is that we will share water together. If you brought water from different places in your life, maybe your home, maybe somewhere you've been, we invite you to come and share it with one another, to pour it into community vessels. There are three around the sanctuary. One is in the back, there are two in the front. Once that's done, I'm going to bring the one from the back up here, and we're going to sort of combine them all in the front. We're going to do that part in silence, and it's funny, as Anise and I were planning this, we kept trying to talk this through, and well, should we try this? And I kept really struggling because I didn't like that it was in silence. And finally, it dawned on me that that was like being in a desert or being in a drought, and I didn't want to do that. It was uncomfortable, and I thought that was probably a good spiritual lesson. So you get that spiritual lesson too, that we're going to do this part of the ritual in silence, just to bring our waters together from wherever they've been. And then later in the service, we will do some sharing about what our lives have been like over the past year. But right now, the element is just that we come together, that that's what our community is for. So I invite you to bring a vessel. If you didn't bring water, there's water at each station. In the back, it's on the floor underneath the vessel. Please come up, share with us some of the water you've brought so that we can combine all of them into one larger container at the end. Once water is connected, it is hard to separate, is it not? So it is nice to have water now in three vessels from both first and second service. I have water also, this is undated, we're just going to assume from last year. Sound good? So we're going to add some water from last year's water communion to show, no, not to drink, to show as a symbol of our connection to the past. Later, after service or during the sharing part, as you come up here and see the central part of the water, which now carries water from all of us, from all the different vessels, I hope you see some part of your reflection in it. May it always bear some part of the soul of Brew in each person who comes through our doors. Talking about droughts and floods is important to me, but so is balance. It's important because I would think that's what we want to seek in life. Droughts we come across and we can't predict. Floods we have to grapple with, often because they rise rapidly or because they're so heavy and so overpowering that we can't get outside of them. But don't we all long for that perfect summer day where everything's green and lush or whatever it is that you imagine that balance? It's not always so easy getting to that spot, but if we work at it, and if we reach out, moving beyond the drought, moving beyond feeling like we're splashing around in the flood, if we find a way to reach out to the safety of community, I think we can get there. For me, the times I have felt most disconnected, most scared and alone have been during the droughts or floods of my life. Times I felt in my soul like something's been lacking or like too much has been going on. That feeling of being bombarded is not always a bad thing. Sometimes when we talk about being flooded, that metaphor works really well to explain what it's like to be taken aback by happiness or grace. But usually when we talk about being taken aback, that's not a great feeling. Having some control, some stability is critical, at least for me. I like to hold on to and know the ground that I'm standing on. This, to me, is where the church comes in. We join together as a community so that when we feel overwhelmed, either by joys or sorrows, we know that someone else can bear witness to our experience and help us get our bearings back so that we can keep going. So whether you feel like everything is calm in your life, whether you feel like everything is even and you're just where you want it to be, business and love and family and health is perfect and you wouldn't change a thing, I pray that for you. Or if you feel like there are just some things that you're on the edge of grabbing, they're right there for you. One more client, and life would be a little less stressful. Or one less client, one more job, a couple less, fewer hours, whatever it is. I hope that in the next year, you're able to obtain it. And I hope by coming into this building, whether it's on Sunday morning or some other time during the week, by reaching out to the people who sit beside you now or throughout the week, you can build a community of support. When it comes to the drought, we get through those hard times not by trying to just get our own. That community that we talked about in the Buddha story wasn't saved because each person went door to door, for no one would be home, but rather they worked together, giving what they had in an effort to save the whole. Here in this moment, in this community, we share together this delicate balance, good and bad, some days more, some days less, all because we join together. Atheists, Christians, Buddhists, Jews, people who just don't know what the heck and don't care, but people together nonetheless. How glad we are to be together. Take a moment, if you will. Think back over the past year. We're going to invite you to share, if you feel called to do so, just briefly, if you would. This is kind of like joys and sorrows, but on a much, much larger scale. This is a time to share with the community if you have felt like you have been in an emotional drought, lacking what you've needed, or physically, spiritually. Perhaps you've felt flooded, either joyously or in a bad way, and you're trying to get out of it, looking for support, or perhaps, thankfully, you're out of all of the turmoil and strife. You're ready to give thanks to this church for helping you. This is a time for us to share in our community, and so if you would like to do that, I invite you to come forward. If you would, line up along the wall, because there are a lot of folks who would like to share this morning, so please line up over there along the house right wall, where Star is, so that we'll know that you're going to share and share with us. And this is in part why we have this water in front, so that you'll be reminded that the congregation is here looking at you and that the water from the people from first service, from years before, from years after, is here to bless you. So we'll kind of transition and end with a couple lines from a song that we sang earlier. These two lines, they'll talk about tears and strength, which you'll see parallel from earlier. So if you want to see the words, they may be up there, but think back to the song we sang just between the water and our sharing a minute ago. There are times in our lives that we feel floods, good or bad, and so there are two stories that I want to end with. I alluded to one earlier with this stole, the story of Noah and the flood, common to many of us. Frankly, not uncommon because it exists in many different myths and world religions. The idea is that at some point in our history, there must have been a heck of a storm because all of our peoples way back when know of a flood. Imagine what it must have been like to see everything you know, all of society uprooted by water, all of the sadness and loss. Hard for me to believe in some ways, and yet it was only 9 years ago that we experienced this in some way with Hurricane Katrina. Again, every year with a water communion, I struggle with wrestling with how do we talk about water when water can be so dangerous and so powerful at the same time. Floods can be overwhelming, and there's not a lot we can do to get out of them, especially if we're unsure. So we have to look around to see the signs to figure out if it's a flood, if it's a drought, which is which, and just seek help. There's this kind of apocryphal tale. You've probably heard it before. I love to tell it. It's really a humanist story, which is one reason I love it. It's a joke, in a way, of a person who's trapped at home by rising floodwaters. I first learned the story, or think I first learned it, in the show The West Wing, but it's been told in other places. So it goes that there's someone trapped at home by floodwaters, and someone comes by with a rope that's anchored to the shore and says, "All right, hold on, we'll walk to safety." The person says, "No, no, I'll be fine. God will provide. I'm a believer. Everything will be okay. I know that a flood is coming, but I trust that all will be well." The waters rise a little bit more, and so the person seeks to go up a little bit higher because the floodwaters are coming. Someone comes by in a rowboat as our person is looking out from the second floor window. "Climb in, and I'll take you to shore." The person in the rowboat yells, "But no," says our person in the house, "God will provide. I am a person of faith. It will be okay." And finally, our person in the house has to climb up on the roof as the waters have climbed even further. A helicopter comes and lowers a ladder, and the person waves them off. "No, go save someone else. I'm going to be okay. God will provide for me." So you can imagine the scene. When our person arrives, reaching the pearly gates of heaven at St. Peter's, for those who had to help me earlier, St. Peter wonders, why weren't you saved? What happened? The person, too, who thinks that they were a believer, a person of faith for all of their life, wondering why God didn't save them, asks, "What happened?" The response is that he was sent, or she was sent, a rope, a rowboat, and a helicopter. Three people with tools made by humanity, all there to help. So why on earth was this person dead? In many ways, our faith is meant to remind us that we do not have to be bound by faith alone, but can trust in the help of humanity. And the wisdom and the insights that we've learned and the tools that we have gained over time, and simply in the offer of a hand to one another. We may not know the way forward. The rope, the robot, the rowboat or the helicopter may not be the salvation we seek, may not solve the drought, and may not solve the flood, but it's a way out of the problem itself. It's not up to our friends or our church to fix our problems. It's simply to be there for us as we work to get through them ourselves. And this is how we start to find some balance wherever we are on that spectrum. We're often in different places at once. We can, at the same time, be in a drought in our creative life and in a flood in our business life, and somewhere balanced in our health life and wherever else, just on day one. Life isn't always as linear as we like. But through moments like this, worship where we come together, joining with one another, only to see the humanity in each other's eyes. By building communion, not through any one thing, not just through water, not just through flowers, not just through bread and wine, but through humanity. Building communion is what gets us to touch and build the holy. My colleague Kale Rice leaves us with this poem. She writes, "It starts with a drop, and then a trickle, a burble, a rush of water bubbling toward its destination, and finally it reaches the wide, endless sea. Know that all rivers run to the sea. Today you brought water, poured it into a common bowl, and though our experiences have differed, these waters mingled, signifying and pulling together, uniting our common humanity. Today you came and shared in the sacred community. May you depart this sacred space, hearts filled with hope for new beginnings, a fresh start. Go forth, but return to this community, where rivers of tears may be shed, where dry souls are watered, where your joy bubbles, where your life cup overflows, where deep in your spirit you have found in this place a home. Know that all rivers run to the sea. This morning, as we end our worship, we often sing our children out, but it was an multi-generational worship, and so we kept children in worship this morning. So we wanted to do something to connect. I'm skipping one thing. My apologies. We're going to do the sharing of gifts and music. Almost got out of it, right? So sorry. All right, so before we get to extinguishing our chalice, we will take an offering of the bounty we are blessed to enjoy and receive. This morning's offering will now be taken and gratefully received. This week, we are doing a piece called Extinguishing Our Chalice to remind ourselves of the song we sing when our children are done. This is a song we sing, remind me again, Anise, that we sing to the children and they sing to us. Why do I always get it wrong? Okay, so when the children leave in worship, they sing to us and then we sing to them on their way out. So we wanted to rehearse it once while we're all together, and then starting next week when the children go to religious education during the service, we'll be doing that. It's kind of a charge, both to the adults and to the children. It's a great song. So we're going to sing it twice through this morning. So please rise in body or in spirit. I invite you to go ahead and take hands for the sung benediction as I speak this one. As we go out into the world, may we be changed and changing, loved and loving. We are called by all that is holy, nature, humanity, spirit, and God, to be fair and kind, just and whole. Go from here in peace.